I love them. I don't care what anybody thinks. I love the Beatles for them, and I'll always love them. Even when I'm 105 and an old grandmother, I'll love them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the She Loves You podcast, the podcast where we talk about the incredible women in the Beatles' lives, everyone from the wives, the girlfriends, the friends, the groupies, the colleagues, and so forth. I'm really excited about today's episode, you guys. It's been a while. Happy New Year, by the way, to everybody listening out there, because it's been a crazy year for a lot of us, and I unfortunately have COVID at the moment, so it's been an even crazier year for me. And I'm just kind of going through it right now, but I'm healthy. I'm not like too sick or anything, but I'm doing pretty good. I've only had like a bit of a common cold, so it's not like the end of the world. Thankfully, because I'm vaccinated. So everybody, if you haven't yet, please go get vaccinated because it will save your life. But anyway, I'm just complaining. But anyway, guys, as I said, I'm really excited about today's episode. I'm back, and I know it's been a while, but I'm back to bring you guys a great, great, great episode. And today's episode, we are going to be speaking about one of my favorite people ever, and one of the most like interesting Beatle girls yet, the one that really no one talks about for like some reason. But we are going to be talking today about Miss Olivia Harrison. And before we get into anything, I just wanted to say that today we have a guest, a very personal friend of mine. She's been a great friend of mine for the past couple, like 2 years now and almost three. And this is my friend, Diane.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah. Hi, introduce yourself. Hi. But this is my friend Diane. She is a Beatles fan just like I am, and we sort of met through Instagram, and we pretty much just talk about the Beatles 24/7, and that's it's our lives, really, all the time. Yeah, it's our lives. But the great thing about her is that she is a fellow Latina like myself. We're sort of the Latina Beatle fans, we call us, and I thought it was pretty appropriate to bring her on for today's episode just because of the fact that Olivia herself is the queen of the Latina Beatle girls. You know, I thought it would be more than appropriate that she come on the podcast today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you, Nat.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm happy to have you. I was so ready to have you on, and I was like, this is the perfect episode. So I'm totally, totally happy. And yeah, I figured we would talk about her. And also, we were going to talk about the idea of the importance of Mexican culture specifically in George Harrison's life and Olivia's as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And how super important it was to their relationship and what it all meant. But first of all, we're going to go ahead and just talk about Miss Olivia herself, her life, and, you know, her life with George and all she did for the world and continues to do to this day for George's legacy. How have you been, Dave, throughout New Year's, and how was your Christmas and everything?
Everything was great. My parents came down here to surprise me, and it was just great. I had a great time, and
that's awesome. I know it's been sort of hard for people to get together for the holidays, so I'm glad that your parents were able to like go and be with you.
They totally surprised me. I didn't see it coming, as you know.
That's amazing. I unfortunately got COVID, so I'm stuck with all of my family these holidays. I did not get rid of them for a second. I love my family, y'all, but you know, it's one of those things.
I get it.
I'm sure all of you get it. But anyway, I'm so excited about this, and I think we're just gonna go ahead and get started. And you know, my rundown, I sort of talk about their lives, and you know, you can jump in whenever. So
she
was born Olivia Trinidad Arias on May the 18th, 1948. She was born in California, but the great thing is her grandparents immigrated from Mexico. They immigrated from Mexico and came from very, very humble beginnings, and really worked for their, you know, their children, for Olivia's mom and dad. And you know, she has this long history of really coming from humble beginnings, and she has a long history also of her family being really hard workers, which I think is, it's a beautiful sort of way to grow up, I think, because you learn like the value of
being hard work.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is something that's especially important in Mexican and Hispanic culture, we really value hard work.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's sort of like a lot of us came from immigrant parents, so we have that experience.
Myself, I get that. Like you come here because you want a better life. You want for yourself and your family.
Definitely.
Something I can understand really well. So
definitely. And you want to kind of give that to your kids. So Olivia's family was really, you know, sort of built on that. And it's really interesting. But yes, her mother was a seamstress and her father was a dry cleaner. So, you know, they came from really, really humble beginnings. And it's pretty amazing to see that, you know, the way Olivia's life would turn out from what it started, you know. But it's, her parents worked really hard, but they gave her the best that they could. And, you know, I think that sort of always, Olivia has always said that family for her is the most important thing. Just because I think as Latinos, Hispanics, we value family more than anything. It's sort of like, we pride ourselves on that, you know. So for her, her family was always a constant in her life. And it's easy to see why. They just seemed like really, really great people. So because Olivia herself was very hardworking, she was a good student in high school. She went to Hawthorne High School here in California, which, you know, is very famous because a lot of famous people actually went there. A lot of rock stars actually ended up going there, which is, it's kind of like a foreshadowing, right, into what her life would become.
It's where one of the Beach Boys went, right?
Or... Yeah, the Beach Boys went. And when we get to the fun facts section, I'll kind of like talk more about that. But yeah, because it's great. But yeah, it's known as the Beach Boys town. That's where the Beach Boys originated from. Mm-hmm. So given Olivia was a student long after, you know, like any of them attended, but it was sort of known for that. And she was a big music lover herself from a young age. She loved rock music. And I think it's so interesting, you know, as a music lover myself, I'd be like, oh my gosh, the Beach Boys went here. Like I'd freak out, you know, every minute of the day, just thinking about that. But yeah, she was a huge music lover. But she also really became passionate about things like meditation and spiritualism and things that were sort of going on during that time, and a lot of people were
seemed like George have a type, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Patty was into it too, wasn't she?
As you're right, you know, he has a type. Patty and Olivia were both very interested in meditation. I will say, I think Olivia was probably interested in it a little more in the sense that she actually ended up going to India herself. And
really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. She did. Yeah, she ended up going to India herself and would study like yoga and meditation, and she was very, very into it. And it was something that she kind of always had with her, which is like really, really interesting to me, just because it's sort of like fate in a way. And I think it's like really, really cool. But yeah, she was passionate about that and passionate about life. She was a young girl and, you know, she just was living the life to her fullest at that time, not really knowing where her life would take her.
Where life would take her, exactly. Like,
yeah, but she kind of knew that wherever it took her, she just wanted to be happy in life, you know, as mm-hmm. many of us do. Yeah, and, you know, that was sort of her early life. She had a great childhood. Her family was always supportive, as I mentioned. She had a brother and a sister. She had an older brother, Ron, and I can't remember her sister's name. But, you know, a great family, a great upbringing, very close to her family. And she had a really good sense of herself is kind of what I've always gathered as well. Like she was always like, I know who I am and I know what I want. And, mm-hmm. you know, she was a very relaxed person in that sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she ended up going to college because she really wanted to sort of she wanted an education and to kind of show her parents that it was all worth it, their sacrifices. And she ended up going to college. And to pay for college, she actually needed a job, as we all do, right? You know, I'm in student debt and I need 10 jobs, you know. But back in the 70s, it was different. You could just, you know, work. So she got a job as a secretary, which is sort of what you did back then. You went to typing classes and you got a job as a secretary. And it was great because she found an amazing place to work, which sort of brought her two loves, music and, you know, like being able to work in a great place. She ended up working at A&M Records, which was the American company that George was signed on to. George Harrison of the Beatles was signed on to. Yeah, I mean, really, it was fate. I mean, she had no idea, right? Like, you just kind of go work somewhere.
I don't think any of the girls had any idea what, like, that they would fall for you. They were just guys. They just happened to see, meet these guys. It's just.
I know, out of nothing, you know what I mean?
They don't ask for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, she just got this job. You know, they said, yeah, you can be a secretary. Do you know how to type? She was like, yeah, I know how to type. Okay, great. You can start with us. And she was like, oh, this will be cool because I'm working for a record company. Not like she was seeking celebrities, but she just thought it would be like amazing,
cool,
you know?
A cool job, yeah.
Absolutely. Although it is, it's really, really interesting because there's this quote that someone said to her and it said, had it ever crossed your mind that you would ever marry someone famous? And she essentially just said, no, I was happy where I was. I did not look for it. I did not find that. And I think that's like the beauty of it all, you know, like she really did not expect any of this to happen at all. And I mean, like that just shows what kind of a person she was. She was so like secure and she was like, I was happy in my life. Like I did not, you know, like I was good. but yeah, so she was really, really happy about just working there. But as I mentioned, there was a lot of famous clients and George Harrison was one of the great clients that belonged to that record company. And you know, as time would go on, George needed to kind of do business over the phone with A&M because he lived in England and it was kind of hard to go to the office every weekend just because just to fly out, you know, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense to.
Totally no sense. So, of course, the only way he could communicate with anybody at the office.
On the telephone.
was on the telephone, right? So, because Olivia was the head secretary of the office, okay. She was sort of the one in charge. George was frequently talking to her all the time, and it became one of those things where they became really fast friends because they would talk about business for maybe like 5 minutes and then
and
it would kind of
time just talking
the whole time. I think there was like a quote that said like they would be on the phone for hours to the point where like they had to be like, all right, like cut it off. Like it's time to stop talking, you know? It just started as this like really great friendship. Like it was not anything that they thought would lead to anything. But that's the thing. George was stunned because they would talk for hours and hours and hours. And there was a point where like, even his friends were like, what is going on with you? Like you're on the phone for hours and like, what is this? And he's like, oh, well, it's the new secretary. You know, like I just like talking to her. I don't know what it is. I feel like this sort of connection to her. I can't explain it.
And he said though, didn't he? There was a quote that was saying that she had a very calming presence, didn't she? Like,
yeah, just she was really calming about everything.
Yeah.
And I think that was something that was like new to him because for a long time, he's been through so much in the past like couple years and people that know him always sort of had expectations. And I think the thing about Olivia is she never had any expectations about him or what he should be or like who he is. And I think to him that was like new. And they would talk about things like meditation and, you know, like life. And I think to him, he was like, oh, you know, this is new. I like this. I like talking to her, you know? And there's a great, great quote by Chris O'Dell where she's like, you know, he's telling me to go to the office and go see Olivia. And I told him, okay, but like, I'm not going to do that. That's so weird. You know, like she's some girl. Like, how do you even know this chick? He's like, I don't know, but like, I think I'm falling in love with her. You need to go see what she's like, you know? And she did. And she says that Olivia was just as gorgeous as she, you know, imagined. And it was just an instant attraction. And Olivia herself really says that it was love at first sight in a lot of ways, even because, you know, they already talked over the phone. So they knew each other in a way, but just never met. And it just really like, you know, it blossomed and he came to the office and they met and it was from then on, like everything changed. George knew immediately like this was his life and this would be like his new life and he was smitten and she was in love. And you know, it's like, it's so interesting because it really sounds, their story, it to me it sounds like a movie in so many ways. Like it's so romantic and like I'm not a romantic person, but like as you know, but something about them just it like makes my heart like so big, it grows like 10 sizes. Like it's just, it's so beautiful.
Like he fell in love with her voice first. I mean, this is mm-hmm. He didn't even see her yet, so to fall in love with like her voice and stuff, I mean, that's like because you know how men are. Men are, like, as sad as it sounds, physically, like, physical beauty, that's what they see first.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So to fall in love with, like, the voice and how she is as a person, it's just, wow.
I know.
That to
it's,
me is amazing.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And I think that just goes to show that, like, their connection was so much more than, like, surface level crap. Like, it wasn't about, like, beauty or, like, material things. It was, like,
it was a deep connection.
Yeah, it was a true connection. And I think that, and I think those are the best type of relationships, because it's the most pure ones. And it's, I don't know, it's just so, it's so beautiful. And I think that's why their love story is, like, one of my favorites, honestly. So it's incredible. But yeah, I mean, they fell in love, and it, you know, pretty soon George was supposed to go on his first U.S. tour, which was, like, a really big deal, because it would be the first time that George toured, you know, with his own stuff. I mean, he did, like, albums, but it was more different because it would be, like, his first tour. And at that point of his life, as I mentioned, George was really coming off of this, like, crazy sort of rock star, like, honestly, bachelor world, because even though he was married, he was not living like a married guy in a lot of ways. You know, and especially after everything that happened with Patty, he was just sort of distraught as well, because his marriage was completely over. And, you know, he was also doing drugs and like a lot of alcohol. And it was, you know, like, it was just a really bad period in his life. But Olivia came in and was sort of like this shining light. Not that she saved him, because I don't think people can save each other, but I think in a way, like, that was
calming presence, more in a sense, she was a more calming presence in his life.
Absolutely. She calmed him down, which is what I like to say. She didn't save him. She calmed him down is what I like to, like, call it. But yeah, and pretty soon, as I mentioned, she joined the US tour, and they were joined at the hip at every minute. It was, you know, like, they would hold hands. According to people on the tour, it was like they'd be cuddling all the time, holding hands, would never leave each other's side. And it's just like a beautiful,
it was like this photo of them, like, sort of like dancing, like, kind of like, probably my favorite photo of them, because it's just so cute and it's so innocent. And
it's the best. And you know, there's a great quote that Olivia says, that they would be at customs and, like, you know, kind of checking the bags and stuff at the airport. Mm-hmm. And at that point, even though they had talked for hours, there was still a lot of things that they did not reveal to each other. They were really getting to know each other during that tour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Olivia would have, like, certain books in her suitcase or whatever. And George would kind of look as the guy was sort of searching through her bag, and he'd be like, "Oh, you read that book. Oh, I like that book too. Oh, you read that one. Okay. I see you. I see who you are." So it was like, you know, he was kind of also teaching her, like, his knowledge on certain things, and they would teach each other. And that's, it's so, so beautiful in that aspect. But there's a great quote that she says where, Olivia essentially told him, you know, kind of in the beginning of it all, she said, "You know, I don't want you to think that you've discovered something about me that I don't know. You know, I'm not hiding anything. I am who I am." And, you know, I think in a way, George also, like, lived that way, like, life himself. Like, he was who he was, and he never apologized for that. And I think that's why they maybe had such a good, like, connection on that front. And just, she was so sure of herself. And I think that's what truly helped him at the end of the day throughout, like, a lot of it. So this tour was a really, really big deal. And it really led to just cementing their, in a way, soulmate status, even though I don't really believe in soulmates, but, you know, just it cemented what they would become, really. And, mm-hmm. you know, they wanted to marry. But unfortunately, at the time, George was still legally married
to
Patty, because they had never legally gotten the divorce, which is, like, crazy to me. I don't know how you could stay married to someone and, like, not like, you know, get a divorce. But they moved in together, they became each other's better half. And, you know, after the Patty thing, it was hard, but he was also ready to take that step with Olivia. He was ready to get married. And you know, by 1977, though, the divorce did get finalized. And he essentially like said, all right, let's get married. But the problem was, is Mr. Harrison, George's father, died around that time that they were planning to get married.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was really difficult to even, it was really difficult for them to even have a sort of like wedding in any circumstance, because, you know, the death of a loved one is, it's more important than a lot of things. He passed away. But it wouldn't be too far along. It wouldn't be too far though, because by 1978, Olivia herself got pregnant with Donnie, with baby Donnie. And you know, that of course was like, oh, well now we have to get married after like years of being together. But you know, they got married a month after Donnie was born, which is like, dang girl, after a month of getting married, I don't know how she got married. I'd be exhausted. But
I mean, didn't he like also send her, like, didn't they go on vacation for her to like recover or whatever?
I think they went to Hawaii after like after their wedding or whatever.
Like, like a husband's like, let's just go to Hawaii so you can recover. Like,
yeah, literally, like, what a sweet husband, for real. Yeah, and they, you know, had baby Donnie, and George loved fatherhood. He and Donnie would spend like hours in the garden just playing, and like I think Donnie would even like help him like plant the garden, and you know, like he loved his son so much. And Olivia, you know, it was hard for her because she was sort of now this wife and this like new mother, so there was a lot of transitioning for her, and also living in London or England, you know, kind of going away from everything you've known. It's I don't know, like it's very, I can't even imagine what that must have been like for her, like that huge transition. But I think obviously, like she loved George too much that, you know, it was fine for her. And I think the great thing is they sort of also created this home where a lot of people have actually said, like, you know, they seem to be the most down-to-earth family, the most calming family that you're like ever met. And you know, living in somewhere like Friar Park, which is huge, I mean, it's like a, like I think it has like 20 rooms or something, like, you know, it seems as though it would be a lot, but I think what's great, I know 20 rooms, I don't know, but like what's great is the fact that like they just had this normalcy, like even though it was all grand, Olivia and George really were very a normal couple, even though, you know, George is one of the biggest musicians of all time and all this and whatnot. But also they really prided themselves in being very private. They were never like public. They never did interviews. They never did like any sort of family photos, because I mean, there's no need to do that, you know, like it's their life. And I think that was also really new to George. He finally was able to be in privacy, which he like desperately wanted for years. And, you know, it's interesting that Olivia, I think because she was very private in a way, you know, she was just sort of like, all right, we're not going to, you know, this is our life. We're done. We're not going to like subscribe to anyone else's expectations. And, you know, it was really great. George would prefer to garden rather than like, go out. I think he even said that. He's like, I prefer to be in my garden. I don't need to go to nightclubs every night. I'm good. So really they became like this new sort of calm, private family and the child and everything. And it's really interesting because Donnie himself, he grew up with like the greatest dad ever, you know, according to his words. But the thing about George is he could also kind of be like one of those hippie parents where there was like, no, I'm serious. There would be points where George would say like, you know, do you want to go to school today? You don't have to. We can just like chill out and hang out.
I can see that.
Adventure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it totally makes sense. But, you know, he'd be like, we can go on an adventure. And he's like, oh, he'd be like, oh, but dad, I have a test. He's like, eh, screw the test. You're fine. You know? Yeah, and oh, totally. What a mood. Like, I wish. But there's Donnie said, he quoted by saying, when your parents are cool hippies, the only way to rebel is to get straight A's, do sports, and enroll in a military school. And that's what I did. So
he went to military school.
He did. He like legit enrolled himself in it because he wanted to rebel. Like he wanted to. No, I'm serious. He was like, yeah, like I got straight A's and it. No. And the military school thing pissed his dad off to no end. Like he could not understand why he went to a military school. But Donnie was like, I like it. which is like hilarious to me because like it totally makes sense that you would like be like, I'm gonna get good grades and I'm gonna be in military school. But yeah, it just kind of shows what an environment he grew up in, like a super like peaceful,
chill laid-back environment.
And also, you know, George really taught him, you know, about music, and Donnie sort of developed that passion for it as well. And you know, considering he's literally his twin, thank God he plays music.
Literally, yeah.
They look so similar. It's like crazy. You know, but throughout the good, there was obviously bumps along the way because marriage is, it takes work. And like,
and he wasn't, I mean, we all wish that our husbands are faithful, but unfortunately George wasn't he?
Yeah,
he wasn't,
George was not faithful a lot of the time. I mean, it wasn't a constant thing. I definitely think his Beatle years were more like definitely the years he wasn't as faithful. But yeah, he was not faithful. Mm-hmm. And Olivia has even said this. And if you watch the Living in the Material World documentary, you know that she's talked about that. And she doesn't – what's great about Olivia is she will talk about something, but she doesn't necessarily have to over-explain herself. She just kind of leaves it as it is. And, you know, she said, like, there's been hiccups in the road. And, you know, like, you know, he liked women. Like, what do you want me to say? You know, like, he was just one of those men. But, you know, they worked through those issues and they were able to kind of be stronger because of it. I definitely, you know what, honestly, I wish I had that courage because, like, I am so not that kind of a person.
I couldn't.
Yeah. I don't know how she, like, put up with on any of the crap that he probably like did, but I don't know. I think maybe like love is something that's so unexplainable sometimes. Like it's kind of easy just to
it's only something that the couple themselves understand.
I've always said this. I think that's sort of the one quote I've always said on this podcast. We will never know about a person's marriage or relationship because the only two people that will know is the two people that were in it. You know what I mean? And I think like that's, I don't know, it's such like an interesting way to look at marriage and relationships because sometimes it's not as black and white, even though like I think you and me we tend to look at it black and white.
There's also a quote that was saying that like some people don't like at the end of the day some people don't even value fidelity. It's like something like some people are okay with open marriages and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends, like, what you view as...
What you
like,
want.
What you want out of the relationship. Like, I never cast judgment on people. I would obviously, like, I would wonder, though, what is the point of getting married if you're just going to have an open marriage? To me, it doesn't really make sense. But at the end of the day, like, if that's how you roll and you both are on board...
Yeah. Who are we to judge?
Yeah, I would never. But I will say... You know, Olivia is a very strong woman because I know you and me would not put up with that crap. So like, we would be like done, you know, but, you know, Olivia, I think it takes a lot of strength and I think you have to be at a place in your life where you're like genuinely okay to be like, yeah, okay, we can work through this, you know? Not to say that cheating is good, everybody. I've said this many a time on the podcast too. Cheating is not a good thing. It happens, but it's not a good thing. It is not excusing and we're not saying it's good.
We're not excusing it.
We're not excusing it, believe me. But you know, they managed to work through it and they stayed together for almost 30 years, which is incredible.
I think they're probably we stayed long as almost as high as Paul and Linda, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think they're the second like longest married couple in the Beatles like history. They were together for years and shared an incredible life, and you know, it's just like one of those things where things happen for a reason, I think. And I think Olivia was just immensely perfect for George in every single way. And I'm very thankful that she came into his life because he is very lucky.
Really saved his life too.
Really saved his life in a lot of ways, and
literally too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, that's what we're gonna get to that right now. But another great thing about Olivia is that she was very into her charity work as well. And I think her and George also really had that in common. They always were giving, like, you know, whether it was charities or to less fortunate, she was always very much involved in charity work. And specifically with Romanian orphanages, that was sort of like one of her big causes. The Romanian Angel Appeal sort of became her cause of choice, and she helped with a lot of orphans that were living there, and because the situation was really bad for them, a lot of them were poor, and it was a very, very bad situation. So she was very, very notable figure in that organization and gave back. And I think at one point they even donated like $1 million to the organization. Mm-hmm. With help of like Yoko and Barbara and just a lot of other, you know, of the Beatle women. And it's really, really incredible. And I think also going with that, you know, it just shows that she was always such a good person. And I think George saw that and loved that about her a lot. And I think they actually, one of the few like televised interviews they did was for the Romanian Angel Appeal, just really to advertise that. And it's very sweet to see them on screen together, like how cute they are. And, but yeah, it's interesting because I think it's, you know, because Olivia was not a put myself out there person. She was very private. So for her to go on TV and talk about something, it must have really like mattered to her. And it's really, really, really incredible. And also, I guess on the subject of Beatle Girls, it's really interesting to note that Patty Boyd, as I think I've mentioned this in the past, but she was always still a presence in George's life. George considered her family until the day he died. Yeah. And she was frequent guests at their house. And, you know, Olivia treated her with such respect, and Patty really admired Olivia. And they just had this mutual respect for each other. And, you know, they were like family in a way. And I think it's so beautiful to see that, like, see that women don't have to tear each other down like that, you know? So it's really, really beautiful. And I think that's what I like really a lot about, like,
about this relationship in general, like how calming and how everyone was okay. Everyone was friends for, like,
yeah, I mean, it is
almost friends, you know. I love that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it's wonderful because I think Patty even invited like Olivia and George to her wedding reception party. And, you know, like it's just very, very sweet. And, you know, like I know her and Donnie are close too. And, you know, it's very, very sweet. And George would always tell her, like, you're family, Patty, like, you know, you are my family, so don't even think otherwise. And it's wonderful. And I love that aspect about them so much. But as you mentioned, she did save his life many times, many, many a time. On December 30th of 1999, a man came into the Harrison family home and attempted to assassinate George in his sleep. And Olivia, being the superwoman that she is and the wonderful, incredible woman that she is, immediately got up and screamed. And because, you know, she noticed the man with a knife, and she essentially took a lamp, like a desk lamp or whatever, and just hit him right over the whack, right into the head. And it knocked him out, and she saved George's life. And, you know, it's just like one of those things where, like, you know, she's really like a superwoman. And, you know, like, I can't imagine, like, I don't know if I could have done that. Like, I think I would have just been like, the whole time. Like, I would have just like laid there and been like, don't kill me, don't kill me. But yeah, I seriously would. I'm so like slow. But no, I mean, she really did save his life. I believe that the man did actually like cut them a little, but it was more like cuts. It wasn't anything like too deep or anything. But yeah, I mean, really, if it wasn't for Olivia, I think George unfortunately would have passed away sooner than he did. So I'm eternally grateful that she was there to save him and to save his life, because God knows what happened. Yeah. And, you know, it's incredible. Yeah, truly. But yeah, it's, you know, like one of those things where, you know, she saved his life multiple times in his life and was sort of like his guardian angel in a way. And it's really wonderful to see that. But unfortunately, in 1997, George had developed throat cancer, and they were treating it off and on. And, you know, like, doctor said, oh, it's good, but then it would get worse. And, so, you know how cancer can be. It's very, it's a bitch, you know? And, and unfortunately though, by 2001, it just progressed to the point where there was nothing to be really done anymore. And George would go on to say that smoking really, you know, caused all of this, and having an addiction to cigarettes is, you know, it's a horrible thing. And, you know, it's one of those tragedies. And unfortunately, as we all know, 2001, George did pass away, I think in his home. And yeah, it's really sad because I was, I think I was like 4, maybe. So
probably 5.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't even remember it because I was so little. But
you could ask your parents, but
yeah, like, my stepdad just says that he heard it on the TV, and it was really shocking because this was the only other Beatle death that had happened since 1980. Yeah, so, so it was really, really weird. But in a way, it was, even though we don't remember it, it was our first Beatle death that we can actually like say that we were alive for. But
alive for, yeah,
yeah. But it's really like interesting. And I think also because he was still, I mean, he wasn't super young, but he was relatively still pretty young. He wasn't like 90 or anything. So it was really sad to see him.
Was he 8 or something like that?
I think so. Yeah, I think he was going to be 60. But like, I mean, he was still like a young guy, you know? So it, it's one of those things where like, it just kills you because like, he had so much time left, you know? And I can't even imagine what it was like for Olivia, like losing her soulmate in that way. And like, I just, you know, it's just like one of life's biggest tragedies. And I just, you know, like it's just really, really frustrating. But you know, the thing about Olivia is she's always been like a trooper. She always kind of kept going. And she always said that George is like with her, even if he's not physically here, George is still here. And you know, like she says that like you see him in the garden that he planted, like all those plants that are there, that's him, you know, that tree that he planted, that's him. There's a great quote, which I love, that she said, where like the thing she loved about George is that he loved like the simple things in life, particularly like he would rather like stare at a tree all day than go out to like a nightclub and, you know, be around like people. And like, I don't know, that's, it's just so, it's so interesting. So I think that like equating the garden with him being there, it's just like so beautiful. And you know, she to this day keeps his legacy alive, and she is, you know, the one really promoting his albums and the re-releases. And you know, I think they have a foundation as well, where they help charities. So, you know, Miss Olivia is still very active, and, you know, she continues. Yeah. She looks great. I know. She's amazing. If y'all haven't seen pictures of her when she was younger, she was beautiful, and she's still a very beautiful woman. So, it, you know, it's just like one of those things. And, you know, she's great. I think I'm pretty sure she doesn't run the George Harrison Instagram. Like, I'm pretty sure they have a social media manager, but like, but you know, she's great. She's great. And I think the great thing about Olivia is she's not like the type where she's very vocal about like, you have to buy George's new album and you have to do this. It's very like, okay, you know, here's George's re-release. You know, it's very calm, and she does it with such like grace and such like humility.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you should do it. If you're like kind of in charge of someone's estate or whatever, you should really be humble about it and really like gracious and classy about it. And she does an amazing job. And I can't even, things happen for a reason, and thank God that she came into George's life when she did, really. Yeah. Really, yeah. But yeah, that's just a little bit about her life. But now let's go to the fun facts, because it's my favorite part. That's my favorite part of the episodes always. Well, okay, so as I mentioned, she actually did go to Hawthorne High School, and that was sort of a big deal to George, actually, because of the fact that the Beach Boys were from there, and George and the Beatles were all huge Beach Boys fans. And when Olivia actually took George back to her like old neighborhood, she like gave him the grand tour. And you know, when George found out that she went to Hawthorne, he freaked out. Like, he was like, you went to school with the Beach Boys? She's like, I mean, they were older than me, so no, but like, yeah, I mean, they went there. But actually, another student went to Hawthorne High, as I mentioned, because it was sort of known for having a lot of future musicians that would end up becoming very big. Chris Montez, who at the time, he had a hit single, It's called Let's Dance. It's like one of those, yeah, Let's Dance. It's a very cheesy, like sort early of, 60s song.
Sort of, what's his name? Ricky Valens type.
Yeah, or? sort of like a Ricky Valens type. It was sort of not. He wasn't a one hit wonder because he did have more hits later on. But but he was sort of one of those like early '60s, like oh my god, this is one of the best songs in the country types, you know. So he did go to school with Olivia's brother at Hawthorne, and he, you know, would see Olivia, and I think he was quoted as saying like, oh, I was friends with her brother Ron, and you know, I'd see his little sister Olivia and she would always wave to me and she was very sweet and nice. But eventually in 1963, Chris would actually tour with the Beatles. Like he was one of their opening acts. He was one of their opening acts in, I think, in England. So it was sort of a full circle moment.
That's a coincidence. Like,
such a coincidence. And like I feel like it's really not, like it was just meant to be from the beginning. But yeah, and it was really interesting because later he realized like, oh my gosh, when he saw that George got married to Olivia, he was like, wait,
oh my god.
Yeah he was like, wait, that's Ron's sister, that's Olivia, you know. So it's sort of one of those full circle moments, and it's like, again, things happen for a reason. Sometimes it's not coincidence. I swear, it's like sometimes it just happens. So it's really interesting to
like, all these couples, like it was just meant to be.
totally. So another fun fact is, if nobody knows, and I'm not sure if any of you know, but Olivia actually attended 2 Beatle concerts when she was a teenager. The first one, I think, was at the Hollywood Bowl, and the second was at Dodger Stadium. Both times she had to cover her ears because she could not deal with the screaming. And actually I think her friends were more bigger Beatle fans than she was. She loved music and she appreciated their music.
She wasn't like a Beatle, full-on Beatle maniac.
She was not a Beatle maniac. No, she said that I couldn't actually enjoy the music because of the girls that were screaming. And it's so fascinating because of the fact that her husband, her future husband,
was right there.
I know, it's incredible. And like, I don't know, it just must be like one of those things where you're like looking and you don't really think about anything, but you know, on the one hand you're seeing the Beatles, but on the other hand it's like, that's gonna be my future husband, but you don't even think about that because you're like, we're never gonna meet, you know. So both times she had to sort of like put her ears up because she was like, I can't do this, the screaming is too much, I couldn't even hear the music. But I mean, that's kind of crazy, really. Fate works that way. As I mentioned, she studied yoga and meditation. She went to India by herself, really paid for her trip by herself. And I think she actually like went to Europe with a bunch of friends as well by herself. And, you know, she was really this sort of free spirit.
Independent. Yeah.
Yeah. Really like a free spirit and, a total hippie in a lot of ways, like a total hippie. And, you know, it was incredible.
George was also like really close to her dad, and they also like play music together, right? Like mariachi music as well. So
he loved mariachi music. So that's the thing, as we've mentioned, Olivia is Latina, she's Mexican. Mexican culture was a very big deal in her house. Olivia has even quoted as saying, you know, like I haven't spent much time in Mexico, but I really feel that that's where my heart is. She's always felt this sort of kinship, closeness to Mexico because that's where her family's from. And Mexican culture, as you know, you said, was a really big deal to George. When he met her family, they instantly treated him as though he was, you know, like a son to them. They never treated him special or, you know, anything just because he was famous. And I think George really appreciated that. But he also just fell in love with the Mexican culture itself. Olivia's father was actually like a musician, not a practicing one, but he would play the guitar, you know, in their house. So George absolutely like loved Mexican music, mariachi music. He loved like old sort of like boleros and like, you know, like a lot of the like Jorge Negrete stuff and like Pedro Infante. Like he was obsessed with a lot of like that sort of old classic golden age of Mexican music and cinema and all that. He would watch like old like Pedro Infante movies with his with Olivia's dad, and you know, he was just like one of those, he was obsessed with the culture.
I think that's what I love about George, just his love of cultures in general.
Like, yeah, yeah.
And he's so respectful about it. He's not nonchalant. Like, there's a difference between, like, being an appropriator and legit having love for the culture. And I think...
Totally. And you're so right about that. I think that, like, George was so open to other cultures and he was so, like, excited to learn about them, but he would never, like...
appropriate
it. Yeah, he would invest himself in it and just learn. Like, he would rather learn than try to kind of claim anything or be something that he wasn't.
And I think that's my favorite thing about him, just
the fact
that he's so willing to learn about, like,
I know. Why is he not my favorite Beatle again? What's wrong with me? But I mean, honestly, I feel like I should like George, but God damn it, I love John too much. It's a whole other conversation for a whole other day. Too many can of worms, too many cans. George was obsessed with Mexican culture, and he would often like play sort of old boleros with Olivia's dad, and they would just jam out together whenever they got together.
I can relate to that because, like, men love to do that. I know that my father loves music, and he like play music and play with the guitar and everything.
So I can too because my grandfather, actually, he was a musician, not a practicing one. He never had like a job or anything because that was unrealistic back then. You know, you wouldn't do that
in our culture.
Men were expected. We're more
like we want to, like, men are like expected to be doctors, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not realistic. You can't make money doing that unless you're really good.
Yeah, no, my grandpa was a banker. Like, I mean, it was the most stereotypical, like, get a job, get a family, be done type job. Yeah. But he was a musician, and my grandma actually loved to sing. For a long time, she actually really wanted to be a singer. So her and him, whenever they had, like, parties or anything.
They would sing, My dad is the same way. He would want to do, like, karaoke and all of that. And
it's
our culture, and not just Mexican culture, but Latino culture in general. We love music. We love...
Yeah, I think that's
still in the house. Like,
yeah, and that's probably why I think George felt so at home with them, because he just, like, related to that, and he loved what a great, like, close-knit family they were. And I think that's the thing about Latino people, we'll make you feel at home. You know, like, you come in the door, we will give you a plate of food.
We'll party together.
Yeah, definitely. And that's honestly, y'all, like, if you want a nice home and, like, people to, like, love you forever, marry a Latina girl.
Yeah.
George didn't. Look how good it turned out for him. You know what I mean? As you said, like, George loved her family and he loved the culture. And, you know, it's interesting because you would think he wouldn't really be into that kind of music, you know, sort of the old, like, boleros, but he loved it. He loved it. And it's just wonderful to see that. And I think it's very important that,
I think he and John have that in common, because John is also immersed himself in that, like, Japanese culture when he married Yoko and stuff like that.
So. Oh, totally. Yeah. I really didn't talk about that much when I did my Yoko episode, but I think it is really beautiful.
They have that in common where once they married, they immerse themselves in their wife's culture. And I think that's beautiful. Like,
oh, totally.
You would want someone, if you fall in love with someone, you would want them to be immersed in your culture and stuff like that. You get excited and stuff, and I love that about them.
Oh, totally, totally. And I think that's, like, super important when it comes down to, you know, the impact that these women have had, because they've also showed them a different type of life, you know, like, what other people live like and culture.
It's not to say that the English don't care about family or anything like that.
Yeah,
but, like,
no.
It showed them a sense where family is important, and, like, I love that.
I know, it's so sweet. I love it. I know that John, like, was obsessed with sushi, particularly because, like, Yoko, like, taught him everything, and he just, like, was obsessed with it. So it's like really, it's really, really great to see that. But I know George also loved Mexican food. Like, he was obsessed with it. I mean, how could you not be? It's so good. But I'm like, oh, I want to taco right now. But, like, how, you know, it's one of those, you know. But, yeah, you know, he loved her family, and it was something that would always sort of be with him always. And it's great that he was able to kind of experience that culture. And it's like one of those things. And I think it's really important that we, as, you know, like, fans of the Beatles, can kind of see different type of women involved in their lives, because we can see different kinds of, it's not just It's not just one culture.
It's crazy how their first wives were all English, and then like their second wives were like all these diverse.
It's
cultures. It's so interesting, and I think it also reflects their changing view of like the world at the time as well. How they had this really like view of like, you know, they were Englishmen and stuff like that, but after they toured, you know, they saw the world and everything like that.
Definitely. I think it changed their perspective, and they they knew more of the world, you're right, like with touring, you know, I think they obviously realized like there's more to the world than we thought.
Our own English view of like the world.
Yeah, because it's that quote always gets me, where they're like, we just expected Paul to marry an English girl. So really, it's sort of like they always kind of had expectations, but then I think it surprised even themselves that they loved someone that was from a completely different world than they were like raised in.
More or less what I'm trying to say.
Definitely. But she's an incredible lady that's lived an incredible life. And
like, what would you say being a Latina and being a Beatles fan mean to you?
It means the world, because it means that one of my favorite people in the world loved like Latino culture as much as, you know, like I do. And
it's a big deal. Like the Beatle community in Latino America is huge.
I feel like people really don't talk about that, but you know, to be a Beatles fan in Mexico or Peru or Argentina or wherever you're from.
Another fun fact, and I know this has nothing to do with George, but like Paul actually gave a free concert in Mexico.
He did. Yeah. I remember that, and my stepdad was like, God, why aren't we there right now? He like freaked out because
it was free, and
right in the square, like right there, and it's incredible. As a Latina Beatle fan, you know, someone like Olivia marrying one of them and being
in
there,
it was gonna be George. Like he was gonna be the only one to.
He has good taste, you know. He likes Latina women, so that's good. He has good taste. But no, I mean, for us, I guess it means everything, you know, because we can, maybe not because we're never going to marry a Beatle. That's just,
that's just unrealistic.
It's historically impossible, and it would be weird. But, you know, I guess just understanding that within this sort of community and this sort of like world, there was a lot of representation, and that's a good thing. And I think
it also means that music is universal. It's not catered to one more people. Like, I hate how they call it white people music, and it's not white people music. It's music.
And that's a great point. I think that's, Beatle music is for everybody. You know what I mean? The Beatles music is worldwide, you know, and I think that that's like a lasting legacy. And I think that's the great thing about the Beatles in general, is the fact that there are people that come from really dire situations and, you know, live in really like different countries from maybe the one we're used to or whatever. But the great thing is they all know the Beatles. They all know Beatles songs, and they can connect through that. You know, like I think that, you know, music can connect us. And I think like whenever we see that connection of like cultures coming together, it's nothing is better than that, honestly. And I love it. I love it so, so much. Truly. But yeah, she lived an incredible life. She was an incredible lady. I'm thankful that, you know, she came to George's life and saved him in more way than one. And, you know, she's left a lasting impact. And everybody go out and watch Living in the Material World, because it's a wonderful documentary. It's a wonderful documentary. And you kind of get more insight into her, because she's a really big part of it in the second half of the documentary. And you see a bunch of photos of her and George, and you know, she talks extensively in it, and she's wonderful, guys. So, you know, Miss Olivia Harrison, hats off to you, because you are, you're an incredible lady. And, you know, I'm so thankful for you every single day, and she's keeping George's legacy alive, and I love her for that. So I'm just really, really happy for that. This has been another amazing episode of the She Loves You podcast. You guys, thank you for joining me and Day. She's amazing.
Thank you for joining me. I hope I did a good job.
You did amazing. Are you kidding me? You did so good. I'm going to have you more on, just because it'll be fun to talk about different ladies. But you know, I loved having you on, and I think as a fellow Latina, we of course needed to talk about this incredible lady together, because you know, she just,
yeah, because you're
so
Peruvian
much.
As well. Like,
I'm Peruvian. I'm Peruvian. If y'all didn't know, I don't think I've ever said so, but I'm Peruvian. And Day is Mexican herself. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, I'm not necessarily Mexican, but my stepfather is Mexican himself. So I really have always been in a Mexican family. Like, I've always just been raised in one, even if I'm not like biologically Mexican. In my heart and my spirit. And I was raised Mexicans in a way because, you know, my stepdad's family became a sort of family to me too. So, you know, I feel a very big kinship to them. And every time I go, it's beautiful. So, yeah, I couldn't think of anyone perfect to talk about this with because, you know, it's you. So, yeah, but thank you guys so much for joining us. I hope you had a great time because I know I did. And I know they did. So, thank you so much, you guys. And I will see you on the next episode of the She Loves You podcast where we are going to be talking about Barbara Bach, which should be really, really interesting because I'm going to let you on a little secret. I don't know a lot about her. She's one of those girls that I don't know anything about. Yeah.
It'll be fun.
No, I'm excited. So I'm going to do all the research I can and I'm going to bring you a lot of episodes and let's have an amazing 2022, guys. Let's try to be healthy, wear your masks, vaccinate, social distance. So you don't get COVID like I did. Definitely. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us, guys. And I will see you on the next episode. Bye.